worksheet for all three lessons in Job. So you'll have the same one. And tonight we're going to start Job, which, just mentioned, Job is one of the most quoted books in the Bible. It's also one of those books that just answers a lot of really hard questions. Anybody here ever heard any questions that kind of get answered when you teach through Job? Is that a hand?
Yeah.
What questions have you guys heard?
Why?
Why? Yeah. Yeah. Why do bad things happen? That's a good question to answer from this book.
Where do we go after this life is over?
That's another good one. Yes, sir.
Why do the wicked prosper? Why do the righteous suffer? Like Jeff said, there's any number of questions there that we're curious about. We want to know, especially when we're suffering and we don't know why we're suffering.
Yep. There's a ton of them. There's a ton of answers, too. And we're going to talk about some of those questions and some of those answers as we study through the book. But one thing I want to be careful about is not letting those questions and answers distract from the actual main purpose of Job. So we are going to talk about some of those questions, but we're really, tonight we're going to establish what Job is really about and who the main character of Job really is. Then next week we're going to talk about the arguments in Job, which is most likely where we'll get to most of those questions and answers. And the week after we'll talk about one specific answer, and of course Job's repentance and the repentance of his friends. So that's the agenda for tonight, is just to establish the main character and the main point, which really the book of Job does a great job doing that on its own. So let's open up to Job chapter 1. And I'm going to read this part, and then I'm going to ask you a couple questions. So verse 1 says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. So that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the days of the feast had run their course, Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, 'It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts.' Thus Job did continually." So let's talk about Job first. I put some stuff on the board, but feel free to answer this question differently from what's on the board. How would you describe Job? He was very prosperous, the wealthiest man in the East.
He was righteous.
He was righteous. Yeah, there's 2 words that are used to describe him there in verse 1. He was blank and upright or righteous.
Blameless.
What does blameless mean? Yeah, there was no charge to be laid against him, no sin to be laid against him. You know, I mean, I'm sure that he sinned at some point, but sin was not in his character. It wasn't a characteristic of him. In fact, the opposite was blamelessness, characteristic of Job. That's pretty incredible. What else? How else might you describe Job?
He was a family man.
He was a family man. What did he do for his kids every time they went and had a fiesta?
He sacrificed.
He sacrificed, yeah. And there was something specifically. He said they may have sinned and
cursed God
in their hearts. And I want you to remember specifically that concern on Job's part. He was concerned that his children may have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. And, you know, I kind of was thinking about this. This is kind of a side note, I guess. But, you know, we talk about how difficult it is for a wealthy man to go to heaven. You know, and Christ taught that himself. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a wealthy man to go to heaven. But Job is evidence that it's not impossible, you know, because Job was the wealthiest man in the East, which I'm sure meant he was overwhelmingly wealthy, and yet he was blameless and upright before God. Yes, sir?
Do you mind if I asked you a question about this?
Can't promise I'll be able to answer, but go ahead.
How could he repent and burn sacrifices for his kids?
You know, that's a good question.
Without them repenting?
I don't know how effective it would have been. Mm-hmm. I wondered that too. I don't know how effective it would have been, but it says something about him,
yeah.
Whether it says something about them or not.
It's almost a secret sin that we don't, mm-hmm.
realize that we commit sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, what I'm saying is, you can no more control what your children are doing, but you can pray for them. In that time, the law requested our sacrifice for sins are only forward. Maybe he was trying to, you know, no doubt God put this in here for a reason.
Yeah. It was got to be there for a reason. Were you saying something, Chief?
Praying for them, though, and offering sacrifices for them, I see different in that. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm not looking at that.
That's a confusing question. I've come to the conclusion that whether or not it was actually cleansing them from sin, they were at least seeing him do it.
Well, see, Judas did the same thing that the other apostles did. The other 11 had the same powers that they had until Satan entered his heart. Mm-hmm. And Christ died for his sins, and he washed Judas's feet just as he did the other disciples. But if Judas did not accept it, it didn't do any good. I mean, as far as cleansing it.
As far as I know, that's correct.
And I mean, God don't force it upon us. We have to accept it.
Yeah.
This was under the old law.
Right.
Judas committed suicide, which you can't repent of suicidal death.
Yeah, but I was talking about the gift that Christ offered was not forced upon Judas. It's not forced upon us today. Judas didn't accept it.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing that the other apostles did. But Peter repented for his sin, but Judas didn't.
Yeah. I would hope they were involved in these sacrifices. It never says they weren't. It says Job did it on behalf of them all. So it's possible that they could have been. But even if they were not involved in the sacrifices, isn't it really powerful when children see their parents worship God?
If they saw it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure they would have known he was doing it.
Job may not have been under, like, an explicit law that told exactly how to worship. So, I mean, I kind of just took it as he's doing, you know, anything that he can think of to do to try and be pleasing to God. And he's not going to leave any chance out there that this is something that would be helpful. Now, whether or not it is, who knows? But I think he's just doing everything he can is kind of what it shows.
There's no date driven on Job, so he may be on the patriarchal law.
Yep,
like it was before the law.
I kind of think it was. We're not doing it now for chronological.
Right.
You know, we're just doing it now to get it done there.
Jesus Christ stated that if you have faith and you say, mountain be moved, and the mountain will move, that's what he says. If you've got that faith, he says, yeah. Now, he referred to the apostles at different times as though ye of little faith, because they asked so much of him. But if you've got the faith that God will take care of things, then no doubt Job had that faith.
Yep.
And it's a good possibility that he was a Gentile at this time.
I think that's true too. And, you know, I think Clark actually hit the nail on the head. Job was just doing everything he could do to be right before God, including his family.
Well, just one more point. The burnt offering is not a sin offering. It's an offering of thanks, basically, to the Lord, at least under the law of Moses. And I come in agreement that Job was doing what he knew to do at that time and not under the law of Moses.
Mm-hmm. That's my impression. That makes sense to me.
As far as the rich man part, I just wanted to offer, my dad used to always say, be careful pointing the finger at the rich man, because somebody's pointing the finger at you. Somebody's always worse off than you. And to realize you may be the rich man at some point.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, rich is a relative term. But with all this in mind, let's remember, Job is not the main character of Job. Even though the book is named after him, Job is not the main character. We're introduced to the main character in the next section. And just to make this plug one more time, remember, he was afraid his kids would curse God in their hearts. Well, then we have this really... I have a wild imagination, to be frank. So to me, this is a really cool part of the Bible. Let me have Vaughn's here read verses 8 through 12. Or 6 through 12, excuse me.
Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around the household, and around all that he has ever, on every side? You have blessed the work of his hand, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face."
In verse 12 as well.
And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord.
So there was a day when all the sons of God were before him. And Satan was there too. And like Billy read, what did Satan say? What was the first thing he came in to say?
"And you made me."
Well, before that, what's the first thing he comes in there and says? You're right, Doug. He does say that.
Well, the Lord asked him where he's been.
Where have you been?
And then Satan responds, "I've just been going everywhere, up and down the earth, walking here and there and everywhere."
Mm-hmm. To and fro. All over your creation, right? Because who created the earth? God. So I've been going all over your creation, and then God asks him, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And Satan says,
"Does Job fear God for nothing?"
Yeah. He says, yes, he had considered his servant Job. And what gets me about this part is that the devil was actually right about so many people. Because his answer to God was, "Yes, and does Job fear God for nothing? You've built up this hedge around him, give him all this stuff, take it away, and he'll curse you to your face." And isn't that true of many people? You know, when things are going for us, we love God. We're the biggest fans. But then when things crash down, we go, "Why, God, there, you know, must not be a God. He wouldn't let bad things happen if they're, you know." That's what most people do. Satan wasn't wrong about most people. But he was wrong about Job. What did Satan specifically say that Job would do if God removed the blessings?
Curse him to his face.
Curse him to his face. Where have we heard that before? Where have we heard that?
Wasn't sure.
Well, but in this context.
That's what he was worried that his sons would have done.
That's what he was worried that his kids would do. Yep. And now Satan has come to God. Job offered sacrifices because he was afraid that his children had sinned and cursed God in their hearts. And so now Satan comes to God and says, "I've been all over your creation." And God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And Satan's like, "Well, in fact, I have. And if you will turn against him, he will curse you to your face." And, you know, there's... Actually, I think I'm not going to chase that rabbit hole. I'll be very brief. Satan's wording here is really the same that's used for temptation and sin all throughout the Bible. It means to turn away from God and pursue something else. And so the idea of cursing God to his face doesn't mean that Job might actually utter like a swear word or, you know, even completely turn away from God, but just kind of lose faith in God and build faith in himself. Which, again, is something that people do when we struggle, right? We say, "Well, I'm in a problem. Let me try to take care of it." And I'm really chasing that rabbit hole. I just said I wouldn't. But that's what Satan was doing. And so I want to make this point before we go into next week. We go into the arguments laid out in Job. You know, Job has to do with why bad things happen. We'll look at the answer to that question. But the book is not about why bad things happen. You know, it's a question in the book. but it is not the point of the book. And Job is not about faith. Great lessons in this book about a strong, enduring faith. But faith is not even the point of the book. The point of the book is God always wins, no matter what.
He's always in control.
Mm-hmm. He's always in control. And he's going to win. You know, in the end, no matter how much Satan tempts us, is God going to win or is Satan?
God.
God, that's right. Yeah, God's going to win. No matter how bad it gets, no matter how much we lose, no matter what it looks like, God will always win.
Not only that, but Satan is always under the control of God.
Mm-hmm.
He can't do anything that God won't allow him to do.
Yeah, it certainly appears like...
There is in the niche.
Yeah, you're right, Jack. It appears like God had to give him permission.
Right?
Yeah.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
In verse 6, and I struggle with this every time we ever open up Job, it says the angels came to present themselves before the Lord and Satan came also. It's like they have these board meetings once a month or something. I mean, you know, they're like... To me, it reminds me of the Santa Claus when you watch that movie. You got the Tooth Fairy and all of them together in a big meeting thing. It's like they're all together. And that don't, you know, I thought that they were enemies.
Yeah.
And it blows me away that they come together like this and Satan's there.
Well, so I admit, Doug, that question has spent a lot of time wheeling around my head. And what Jack said is really at the heart of it. Satan is under God's feet. So it's really not all that surprising that he'd be in the presence of God. God has control over him.
It's almost like he's a part of, like, you know, Jesus is the good people and the bad people have to have somebody to rule over him. So he's, you know, appointed by God because, you know, he has bad in his heart. I don't know,
Yeah, the theological implications that I'm willing to draw from this passage are pretty thin. It is interesting, you mentioned the enemy, the word for Satan in this, and most of the times you see it in the Old Testament is adversary or enemy. So whatever Satan was, whoever he is, I guess he's still around, you know, he's the enemy of God. Which is why it's so important that we obey God, because if we don't obey God, what are we? We're Satan's ourself. You know, we're adversaries ourselves.
He is the spirit just as God is the spirit. And when we do the work of him, then we're angels of his.
Yeah. I mean, they're messengers or servants of his. Yeah. Let's keep going with the main character, though.
Thomas, yes, Revelation 12:10 tells about the accuser.
That's another name for
Satan. Mm-hmm.
That's Satan.
Yeah. And again, I really struggle with how to apply some of these passages. For now, we'll just continue with the main character. Look at chapter 2. I'm going to skip a little bit in Job, because we're going to look at the main character and the main purpose of Job. So Satan went out and did what God gave him permission to do to Job. Took away all of his possessions, his children. And then in chapter 2, let me have a volunteer read verses 1 through 6.
On another day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them to present himself before him. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming through the earth, going back and forth in it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil, and he still maintains his integrity, though you enticed me against him to ruin him without any reason." "Skin for skin," Satan replied, "a man will give all he has for his own life, but stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Very well then, he is in your hands, but you must spare his life."
So again, there's this board meeting, as he says, you know, in heaven, and Satan appears, and God asks him, what did God ask?
He's asking, where have you been?
Where have you been? And what did Satan answer?
Back and forth.
To and fro, all over your creation. God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Satan says, "Who?" What did Satan say? Yes. And he gives him the same answer, you know. Skin for skin. What does that mean?
Not sure. Physical.
Yeah.
He'll curse you if you attack his physical life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The devil says, okay, all right, so he doesn't value stuff as much. But take away someone's health, you know, you attack someone's body, surely they're going to turn against you. And again, the devil is a shrewd, it's a shrewd assessment of human nature, isn't it? Isn't that kind of true? And health conditions tend to be the ones that cause us the most, you know, problem with our faith. But he was wrong about Job. He's right about a lot of people. He's wrong about Job. And again, notice, what did Satan specifically say Job would do?
Curse him to his face.
Curse him to his face. He will turn away from you, turn away from your face, and pursue his own way. And, you know, to emphasize this point even more, I'll summarize a little bit. So Satan, you know, gave him these boils that covered from the top of his head to the bottom of his foot. He was so miserable, he was scraping himself with broken pottery to try to get relief. And his wife comes out in verse 9 and said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." Where have we heard that before? Satan. And Job, that's why Job answered, "You speak as one of the foolish women speak. Shall we receive good from God and not receive evil?" And in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. So Satan didn't just tempt him with his health. He didn't tempt him with his possessions. But he broke up his marriage. I mean, he attacked his marriage even to try to get Job to turn against God. And as of this point, it didn't work, did it? And there's a quote in chapter 42 in verse 5 that I think really drives the point that I wanted to make home tonight. Job, after going through everything, after having his own wife turn against him, after having his friends come and say, "You're only suffering because you've done something wrong, this is your fault," and after Job himself finally breaking, at least to an extent, asking God why, Job is answered by God, and he says in chapter 42 and verse 5, "I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you." What do you think he meant?
In context, in personal context.
Yep. I think what Job is talking about is the difference between the comfortable kind of belief that a lot of people fall into in real rock solid faith. Does that make sense? A lot of people hear the gospel, for example, about Christ, and take it, because honestly, who doesn't want to be forgiven of sin? That's a wonderful offer, isn't it? Who doesn't want to spend eternity in heaven? That's a great thing. And especially if you've come to the point where you realize that you have made messes of your life and can't clean them up, which most Christians have been at that point before. And then you hear, "Hey, Christ died for your sins and he'll clean them up for you." Of course you're going to jump on it and you're going to follow him. But then these challenges come. And if you don't have that rock hard faith, those challenges chip away until you slide away. You know, that's the difference between that comfortable belief that many people have and that rock solid faith that Job had. This experience opened his eyes to actually seeing God, who God is. Job, in short, was saying, "Everything that has happened is about God. It's not about me. It's not about Job. It's not about my friends. It's not about my family. It's not about my possessions. It's about God." That changes the way that you think about everything, doesn't it? I mean, honestly, how comfortable is it to say, "I need to put God before my family"? I think in some ways it's harder than even saying I need to put God before myself, because, I mean, raise your hand if you would die for God. It'd be hard, I'm sure.
It's easy to say without the knife feeling on your neck.
Yeah. Now raise your hand if you're as confident saying you would let your children die for God. I gotta admit, it's having a tough time raising my hand for that one. But isn't that what God did for us?
Yes.
That's what God did for us. And that's real, rock solid faith. And I pray that no one here's ever in either of those situations, for the record.
He turned his back on God. Christ did.
Yep. In a manner of speaking, at least in some way, yes, ma'am.
At the point.
Mm-hmm. Of the cross.
You know, Tom, in a way, if you don't teach your children, then you're handed them over. Saved. Mm-hmm. You need to teach. And you need to. All the stuff that he tells you, you need to do. The Israelites, every 7 years, they had to read all the law. Mm-hmm. They had to teach all the law. So you have to teach your children. Mm-hmm. You have to teach.
Yes, sir. That's 100% true. And that's the lesson of Job. Like, that's the message of Job. You know, as hard as it is to take that train of thought or to think that way, it's all about God, it changes everything when you do. Because in truth, if you do sacrifice yourself, you'll get to heaven. If your children follow the lifestyle Christ led, a lifestyle of self-sacrifice, they'll get to heaven. And in heaven, will it matter? Will it matter whatever we suffered on earth?
No.
It will not. It won't matter. And that's the conflict of Job. A lot of times when we talk about the way it builds faith, or when we talk about the way that, you know, why bad things happen, we get caught up in the earthly conflicts in Job. We get caught up in the disease and the oppression and the loss of possessions. But the conflict in Job is that Satan strolled into God's throne room, so to speak, challenged God again. And then even finally, mankind, as represented by Job and his friends, challenged God. And each time, God won. Right? Job is about God. And the point is that God will always win. Even when God winning doesn't look like winning to mankind, God is still winning. We sing a song, "Not Only Faith Is the Victory." It really is. It really is the victory. And that's what that rock-solid faith is. It's believing that God is still winning, even when it doesn't necessarily look like winning. Is there any questions or comments?
Satan, you know, if you think back to Adam, Satan used Eve to deceive Adam, you know, in that way. And he's doing the same thing here, trying to get Job, you know, through Job's wife, but Job didn't. Overcome, but where Adam did. But, you know, sometimes we have faith in our wives, and wives have faith in their husbands, and that's your best friend. And, you know, a lot of times we'll listen to them before we'll listen to anybody else. And, you know, he was trying to get it at a weakness that we would have, you know, that if your very best friend in the whole world, the person you trust the most with everything about you, tells you to curse God and die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he didn't fall for it.
Yep.
Yeah, when Doug says in marriage, you and your wife become one.
Mm.
Right. The closest person on this earth to you is your wife. Closer than your children, closer than your parents. When they tell you what to do, curse God and die.
Yeah.
It's tremendously strong.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we're about to actually give just about every character in this account a pretty hard time. But really think about what they were seeing. Like Job's wife, and we'll talk about Job's friends next week. Ladies, you know, if you saw your husband lose everything in a day and then lose his health shortly thereafter, I mean, wouldn't that hurt you?
But we have to remember, we're not in control. Mm.
Yes, ma'am.
You
know. I wonder why she thought the cursing God would do anything. I mean, I don't know how she attributed that to God.
Probably thought that it would speed up his death, that God would go ahead and take him out of his misery.
Yeah.
But I don't see how that she could, if her mind was right, how she could reason that.
Well, she thought the same way that his friends did. Mm-hmm. I mean, their thought was that he was being sinful, and that's the reason he was punished. So I guess if you completed that, if you took it as far as possible, the result would be you being killed. That's the reason I would think that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were guilty of judging.
They were. And again, we're about to give them a really hard time, but they're watching their best friend basically be tortured. You know? That's pretty tough. And I think what they were doing is what I always try to do in my marriage, at least. Amelia will tell me about a problem, and I'll start being like, well, this is what we can do, and this is what we can do. And guys, I don't know if you figured this out yet. I'm learning it. But they don't always want to... Ladies don't always want to know how to fix it. They just want...
They just want you to listen.
Yeah, they want you to listen and support. And not just instantly offer solutions without fixing. And that's usually what his friends are doing. The only logical reason all this can happen is that you sin, so repent, or in the case of his wife, curse God and die.
Looks like she was just went on, took the axe and killed him. I mean, if she thought that was the answer.
See, we can understand this so much better because we have this mm-hmm. account than others. They don't, I mean, I don't know what they would have had to look to see how God deals with people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they obviously had some understanding, but it would have been much more clouded and incomplete than what we have.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch somebody suffer that you really love, you know. Maybe she wanted, for his sake, for him to get out of the pain that he was in.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sure she did.
But you know what the ultimate goal was? Nothing was going to happen to Job because God wouldn't let it happen.
Yep. Which, again, that's kind of the point. Like, God was really the one in control. God was really the one with Satan even under his feet. God was the one in control. That's really the point. God always wins. Even when it doesn't look like one.
And she has lost her children.
Yes.
I mean, that would be hard to think rationally at that point, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is there anything else?
This is what James says about Job in James chapter 5. The idea of remaining steadfast. Steadfastness of Job. Job is a. He is. I think he is like the Abraham of his generation. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've always thought that since he's in the wisdom literature and what he says is so wise, that he is probably the greatest man, either right before Abraham or right after Abraham. Mm-hmm. And is the top, if you can take out the strongest of all of God's men, Satan would have been, you know, gloated and he aimed high. And steadfastness or endurance is a hard subject to develop, a hard thing to develop. And I just have to admire Job. And I think when you get into his friends that come to comfort him, they are kind of used the same argument Satan would have used.
Yes.
To try to get him to admit that he has sinned. And he says, I can't think of what my sin would have been. It would have been such a great sin to bring such a great suffering upon myself.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it did take into account what Job was before all this happened. You shall know the tree by the fruit it bears. A good tree produces good fruit. A bad tree produces bad fruit. Now, if they had looked at his life and by being close friends and a mate, you could look at his life and say, hey, he's done nothing. And he's got the right to remain steadfast to the Lord, faith-wise. And let it win it there, because each individual deals with the Lord in prayer, faith, and keeping his commandments and doing all that you're supposed to do. Each individual is responsible to do that. Mm-hmm. For us to look upon one of our brothers and say, oh, you really done something bad after you've got balls all over you, you know. To me, that looks like they were judging.
Yep. Yes, sir. Yeah, in fact, I think next week is going to be one of my favorite parts of Job, because we're going to try to go through all of the arguments between chapters 3 and 38. So you should have already been reading some of Job. If you haven't finished it yet, try to finish it, or at least get through chapter 38 this week. And if you can't, do the best you can. I think what you're going to see next week is that those aren't even make sense. It's not like they were just there purposely twisting words or trying to cut Job up, at least at first. I'd say for the second half of there starts to be some pride and maybe argumentativeness jump in. But, you know, at first their arguments are very logical, very sound, and in fact very spiritual. Some of them we're going to see especially are based on spiritual things. So make sure to read those things. We'll talk about them next week, and we'll probably address some of these questions that Job is so good about addressing. But remember, the main character is God. The point of the book is that God always